Good morning and happy St. Patrick's Day. You are tuned in to Panhandle Community Radio. That's 88.5 KRFY. I am Lonesome Jack up here in the studio without an official co-host, although we might have an unofficial guest host jumping in later on in the program. It is St. Patrick's Day, and you're tuned into the KRFY Morning Show every Tuesday and Thursday here on 88.5 at 8 o'clock in the morning, running until 9. Today, joining me in the studio, the cast and crew, or some of the cast and crew, from the upcoming performance of Alice in Wonderland, which will be taking place starting this weekend at Sandpoint High School. Later on, Jane Fritz from the Idaho Mythkeeper is coming in, talk about the movie Trudell, which is showing this weekend as well. But first, the weather. Here in North Idaho, it is currently 30 degrees, but a beautiful sunny day so far. Should be mostly sunny today with a high near 45 degrees. That weather pattern looks like it's going to be continuing through most of the weekend, but then a chance of showers on Sunday. High of 47 tomorrow and 51 on Saturday. High of 56 degrees on Sunday, but chilly at night, down to 25 degrees tonight, and roughly like that for the rest of the weekend. So enjoy the next couple days of beautiful weather, and we will see what next week brings. Also, daylight savings time is officially on as of 4 days ago, so if you haven't reset your clocks yet, you are late to work for the fourth day in a row. Get with it. And speaking of daylight savings time, I think the worst experiences I ever had with resetting my clock all took place during my high school years. And we have a few high school students in to share with us, not specifically about daylight savings time, but we can talk a little bit about that too. The play is Alice in Wonderland, and Jeannie Hunter is the director and the president of Growing Dreams Productions, which...
Good morning.
Good morning, Jeannie, that you're putting on the show. We also have here, you guys can introduce yourselves, but we have Alice in the studio, Lily Weishauer.
Hi.
Oh, Weishauer.
Weishauer.
It's okay. Okay. I wrote down a V where I should put a U. And Natalie Aller.
Hello. I play the Mad Hatter.
Good morning. And Casey Stearns, you are the stage manager.
I am.
And as stage manager, maybe you should go ahead and tell us when and where this production is taking place.
Yeah. All right. So we open tomorrow, the 18th, and the show is at 7 o'clock. And then we have two shows the next day on Saturday, one at 2 and then one at 7. Then we also have shows the following weekend, the 24th, 25th, and 26th at 7 o'clock.
Okay.
And you can get tickets at Eve's Leaves. You can also get them at brownpapertickets.com. Look for Alice in Wonderland in Sandpoint. And then you can also get them from Cast and Crew for $15. And then for 12 and under is $12 for tickets.
Nice. And this is taking place at the Sandpoint High, like at the auditorium?
Yes, in the high school auditorium.
Okay. Well, how nice. And the three of you, correct me if I'm wrong, are students at Sandpoint High School, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, we are.
Thank you. Yeah. What do you call it? It's not a visual medium, but Jeannie, of course, you are not a student at Sandpoint High School.
No, I'm not, but I do teach drama and debate at the high school.
Okay. But this is not as we said, it's not a Sandpoint High School production per se, even though you are a drama teacher.
Correct. Growing Dreams Productions is a community-based program. It is an independent business from the high school. However, Growing Dreams is partnered with Mime and Mask, which is a high school entity. It's our drama club, to present Alice in Wonderland this year. But we do have students and children from all sorts of all the different areas, schools from the high school, from the middle school, from the Waldorf school. We also have children from many of the elementary schools, children that are homeschooled, and we even have some students who are traveling from Bonner's Ferry and in areas, different areas outside of Sandpoint, who are participating in the show. So we have children as young as 7 years old all the way up to 18 who are involved.
Cool. And that's quite a range, too.
It can be a challenge.
Yeah.
But they're wonderful. It's been wonderful to work with so many professionals. John Brownell is our music director. He also teaches at the high school. And Debbie Lindner is our choreographer. And she is a local person here in town who has been a professional dancer and choreographer, but is not currently working in the business and has come out of retirement to help us for this show.
How did you decide Alice in Wonderland? Who came up with that bright idea?
Well, we were looking at a different show, and I had some resistance from the group. And so I said, okay, what do you want to do? And they came up with a group of different ideas of different shows that they would like to do. And we started researching and looking, and I came across a wonderful script that was written by a man in California. His name is Tim Nelson, and he has written, he's a playwright, the lyricist, and the composer of this original show. And I was very impressed with it, and I thought we could do a lot with it. And he has been very flexible and wonderful to help us with the with all the changes that we need to make, because we have some older cast members and some younger cast members. So we've had to do some changing with the music and with some of the words, and he's been really flexible. So it's been wonderful to work with somebody I can actually talk to rather than a corporation.
Yeah, that's very cool. Yeah. And it's not a, it's not a play that not something off Broadway or something where you'll never get a hold of the actual playwright. You can talk to him on the phone. That's very fun.
And it's been really fun because the kids have, this is the first time they've heard this music. However, many of the words are from Lewis Carroll's book. So that's what it's based on. So it's a familiar, the story is the same. We have all of the same characters based on Lewis Carroll. And it's just the music is a lot different. And I think, I don't know, I'm a bigger fan of the music we're going to be singing than I was, say, the Disney version. I'm not a big fan of that music. So this was a real revelation for me, so I could enjoy the music and also the story.
I see. So it is a musical. Who's are you guys both? We have the two cast members, Lily and Natalie. Do you guys both sing in that?
Yeah, I sing in like everything, and then Natalie and I actually have a really cool song that we do together. Yeah,
right. it's called The Song of M. It's an alliteration.
I see. Oh, well, I won't put you on the spot right now. You don't have to sing it this morning. But is it how do you guys like, I don't know, the music? How does it compare to other maybe musicals that you've been in? Is it contemporary, or does it feel classic? I don't know. What's your opinion of the music? How would you describe it? Go ahead, Natalie. You're on the spot.
Well, with the musicals I've been in, most of them were classical, like Guys and Dolls. That was a great one. That was definitely classical music. This one, I don't.
It's like it has like the classical feel, but the music isn't like old timey. If that makes sense, like all the music, because it was done by that playwright, and it's all original. No one's ever heard it, so I guess that makes it seem new, if that makes sense.
I was reading a little bit about Alice in Wonderland yesterday and this morning and stuff, and I was surprised. I haven't really read or watched Alice in Wonderland since I was just a little kid, and I was surprised at how funny it is and how much stuff I'm kind of picking up on now that I certainly had no idea. It was just way over my head when I was watching it at the age of eight or whatever.
The music is a wonderful blend of multiple eras. So we have some songs that have a 20s feel, some that have a 50s feel, some very contemporary, some that's incredibly classical. There are ballads. The one that Natalie sings with two other students, they're... it's all a tongue twister. So and then they sing it all at the same time, their own little tongue twisters, and blend incredibly well. But it's very clever. It's not anything I had ever heard before.
One other thing I was thinking about as I was reading through this was that I was wondering if this is a special effects extravaganza, Casey, because there's some weird stuff that happens in this book. How
would
you guys handle that?
There are definitely some challenges with the set pieces. I think the big one would be when Alice is going to enter Wonderland. There is a series of like doors and tables we had to have that grow and shrink with her to make her look different sizes. I think that's really challenging. But we do have some amazing costumes for this show. And one of the greatest effects we have is we have black lights and black light accents and a lot of the costumes. We have like at least two tech people that are working on costumes every day, painting fluorescent paint on them so that they'll all glow and pop so you can see them on stage. They're fantastic.
Cool. Very cool. I was just curious how much of this is, how big is the staff, the behind the scenes staff crew? How big is the crew? How many people don't you see that have to?
Well, I know we have a cast of 50, which is the people that are on and dancing and singing all at once until the very end. But I think of crew, including costumers and parents that volunteer, and then the directors and the choreographers and makeup and hair, I think we have about maybe 20 or so at the most, but that's also including parents that volunteer to like offer food for students and help make sure the rooms are clean, because we're also borrowing some of the rooms from the teachers to use the space when we're performing.
Actually, we might have more than that when you think of all the costumers. We probably have close to 20 just costumers that have been working behind the scenes.
Wow.
So it's a very large crew.
Yeah.
The running crew, the people who actually move everything, you have 10? 8? No, we have six.
Mm-hmm.
Six behind the scenes running crew. But then we have lights and sound and all of the people behind that as well. And we have puppeteers. We have a 17-foot puppet that is that takes 8 puppeteers to operate.
Okay.
And we have about a 19-foot tree. And there are a lot of really cool. We have a 9-foot mushroom.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some really neat set pieces that we're using.
Mm-hmm. Julie and I were talking before you guys came in about, I personally was never in a play and never, I kind of thought about it every once in a while, but I could never work up the courage to go try out for a play. How long have you guys been doing this? What made you, what made you step up? Let's start with Alice. Who's Lily?
Yeah, I've been doing this since I was 6. I actually lived in Washington, and I did plays all throughout elementary school and middle school. And then I moved here, and I've been doing plays here since I was a sophomore, so 2 years ago. And I've auditioned for every play, and it does take a lot of courage, and I've definitely grown a lot since then. But it's like the most rewarding thing you could ever do, and it's just been wonderful.
How about you, Natalie?
I've been acting since I was born. I used to fall on the ground and pretend I was dead, and my mom and dad would come kiss me like a princess, and I'd wake up again. So I've been acting for a while. My first play was in elementary school. I don't remember the name of it, Sudoku or Sudoku, and I was one of 8 of the girls who played. It's about a Japanese girl who had leukemia. So if you've heard of that, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my actual first play. That was really cool. And then freshman year, Miss Hunter was kind enough to let me in as a freshman in Guys and Dolls. And that was definitely one of the best plays I've ever been in. And I've been in 8 since then.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this is a really good one. This is definitely one of my favorite. Chitty Chitty Bang Bang was a really good one too. So
yeah,
I love acting, and I could see it being a further or future career of mine. I'm really excited about it.
Cool. Casey, do you consider yourself an actor as well, or are you just behind the scenes?
Oh, definitely not. I do not have the courage to get up there and sing and dance like them. I have to give them props for that.
Mm-hmm.
I just do the tech backstage, so I'm the one that helps with organizing all the like hair and makeup and like doing props and set pieces. So anything the actors like use or handle and manipulate, I help either make that, made it myself, or have someone else make it. And I have been doing this since sophomore year, so 2 years ago, and I have actually lost count of how many shows I've been part of. I've done so many, so each one very big, vastly different experience. I think my first one was Auntie Mame, which we did with the high school. And I think I started that like maybe 2 weeks before we actually opened the show, and I'd never even heard of tech before. Mm-hmm. I didn't know there was such thing as people that were all dressed in black that ran around behind curtains that you never saw doing the show. So it was an eye-opener, but I absolutely love it. And I also want to go for this for a career. I think it would be a great opportunity. So,
But you've never had the desire to get up there yourself and...
Oh, no, I can't dance, nor can I sing. I'm better at just telling people what to do and then being like, yes.
Oh, yeah, you're really good at telling people what to do, Casey.
I have found what I'm good at, and I'll stay in that bubble.
She's our little Napoleon.
Yeah. I don't know that much about stagecraft. What's the role of the director, and what's the role of the stage manager? And what are you going to be doing tomorrow night, Jeannie?
Hopefully not having a nervous breakdown. My role, I'm actually the producer and the director. So I handle all of the money, and that's the producer part of it. The director is over everything else. So everything you see that happens on stage and that just appears magically, that all comes through my direction. So I handle the backstage tech crew and the actors, and that's why I have incredibly strong second people. And Casey's my stage manager, so I turn most of the backstage crew responsibility over to her. And then the actors look to me for direction. But it's my vision of what the play is going to look like, my designs and everything that show up on stage. So I don't sleep for about 2 months. That's pretty much my role.
You're the producer and also a teacher at the high school, so you're not totally off the hook by any means. But as a director, are you kind of done at this point?
No. But I have my fingers in so many different things. Mm. So I'm also dealing with picking up and helping people who are like costume information, different things for costume set pieces, hanging lights. We've got to finish setting the lights. So that's part of my role as the teacher at the high school. Is I have to be a jack of all trades. Mm-hmm. And that sometimes gets me into trouble because I do know how to do everything. So somebody says, hey, I don't know how to do this, help me. Then I go and take care of that. So I'm running constantly helping do everything. So if I were in a professional position, then it was all union, I wouldn't be allowed to do any of that.
Yeah.
I would just be able to, about my directing, that would be it. That's all I could do.
Yeah.
So for me, this is a lot more fun because I get a chance to get my fingers in everything.
Yeah.
And that's been a lot of fun.
We should take a quick break, I think, because it is St. Patrick's Day. You may or may not know. And Van Morrison and the Chieftains are queued up on my music player here on the box. Van Morrison and the Chieftains from Ireland, of course, with I'll Tell Me Ma, an appropriate St. Patrick's Day tune. We'll be right back on the morning show here on KRFY. More to come with the cast and crew of Alice in Wonderland.
Thanks for listening to the KRFY Morning Show. For copyright reasons, we can't reproduce protected music on the podcast edition of the Morning Show. But feel free to tune in live at 8 a.m. at 88.5 on your radio dial, or listen anywhere in the world by streaming us through our website, krfy.org. If you listen live, you can hear the full program, including musical breaks. While you're visiting krfy.org, consider tapping that donate button and help keep KRFY providing unique quality radio in North Idaho. Thanks for your support. We now return to the show.
Van Morrison and the Chieftains, I'll Tell Me Ma. That came from Irish Heartbeat, the Chieftains album. We are in the studio with Lily Westower, Natalie...
okay.
Say that again. I did it again.
Weishaar. It's German. Just
wow.
Weishaar.
Okay.
It's okay.
It
like
is.
We were, like,
yeah.
Why is the har like that?
Okay. Yeah. And Natalie Aller and Casey Stearns. And as you guys just mentioned, it is early in the morning. I don't know. Actually, it's later because of the spring ahead, fall back. No, it's earlier. I don't know. I'm out of it. My name, of course, is Jack, and you are listening to The Morning Show on 88.5 KRFY. Thank you for tuning in. We also have director and president of Growing Dreams Productions, Jeannie Hunter, in the studio, and Jane Fritz waiting in the wings to talk about the movie Trudell. We will get to her in just a little bit. But first, this is an enormous production. I mean, this is, you said 50, is that right? 50 people on stage, not all at once, but, at one time they do all. That must be a big stage. That gets a little crowded.
They have to stand pretty close to each other.
Yeah. But that's, I mean, I have interviewed, there's been a couple other plays who have come in here, but usually it's like 6 people total. You know, this is 50 people. That's huge. Plus a crew of, sounds like dozens anyway. So managing that must be a fun challenge for you, Jeannie Hunter.
Oh, it's been a wonderful experience. I have wonderful people. Natalie's mother, Angie Aller, has done an unbelievable job with the costumes. They are stunning. So what makes it all manageable and exciting is the fact that I have wonderful people that are supporting me and working with me and take ownership in their part of it.
You also have, we talked about before our little musical break there, that the age range ranges from 8 to 18. In the studio today, we have seniors in high school, so 17 or 18 or something like that.
Yeah. I'm the only 17-year-old.
Okay. And you guys are, but you're working on stage with down to 8 years old. How's that treating you? Is that fun? Lily, Alice?
Yeah, it's definitely a lot of fun. It's really cute to just like see little kids, and you can tell that they're enjoying it, and like they grow so much from the experience. And it is hard. It's a challenge. They're little kids, but it's nice to like mentor them and teach them like the ways and like how to act and like be backstage, on stage, and everything. And it's wonderful. And like all the little kids love you. Like everybody runs up to me and calls me Alice all the time, and I get hugs, and it's great. So,
Natalie, I have a question for you. No, I have a question for everybody, but I'll address it to Natalie. Are there any older any older cast members who are doing their first production? Because you guys have been doing it since you were,
I think,
much
Devin,
younger.
Yes, Devin is a sophomore in high school, and this is his first. This most likely is his first play, and he's from Bonner's Ferry, and he's phenomenal. His acting skills for being homeschooled and never being in a play are very, very, very nice. And it's really fun working with him too. And with the little kids, it's really cool seeing how young acting can go. Like it's so cool how like you can be so young but know how to do all this stuff. And I don't know if it's they're actually acting or just being themselves, but they definitely have a lot of fun, and it makes the whole experience really cool because it's like a family. Families usually always have little ones and then big ones or some kind of age range. And so I think that's really cool that we have that opportunity and they have that opportunity too. So
how did you guys, was there an audition? Were you guys in competition to be Alice, or how'd you get assigned these roles?
Yeah, there's definitely, especially for Alice, for the Mad Hatter too, for Cheshire Cat, there was competition. A lot of it boils down to seniors, because like it's your last chance to get a lead, and so it's like it was between me and another girl, like hardcore. We both knew that we both like had the chance to be Alice, and yeah, so many people went up and auditioned, and it's so nerve wracking, but it's like the coolest thing ever. I don't know.
Yes, auditioning is the scariest thing you'll ever do in your life. Miss Hunter says she still is always scared when she auditions for things. And it makes you human. It's so cool the way you feel when you audition. And then if you feel good about it, it makes you feel so great that mm-hmm. you did great. And if you do, you do have bad auditions sometimes. I had a bad audition. I've had bad auditions. But this one, it was definitely a competition, especially for a guy role when you're a girl. It's like, oh, well, mm-hmm. I can do it, but you're the guy and it's a guy role. So it's just kind of chance. And
is it more nerve-wracking to be doing the audition than it is to be on stage?
Oh, yes.
Yes, huh. Definitely. Especially if this is like what you've always like wanted. And so to like audition and then have the chance to do that and then like find out if you get the role or not, that's definitely way more nerve-wracking than being on stage. Being on stage is nerve-wracking, but we all love it so much that it's like a really good, it's a good feeling. So.
It feeds the soul.
Yes.
That's what I like most about acting is how, like, the ability to make someone feel a certain way because you're portraying a character. And the way the audience reacts to us, it's like, it's feedback. We work with each other, and it's really cool. Like, the play wouldn't be the best it can be without the audience, because if the audience isn't laughing at a joke or whatever, you kind of lose that, like, oh.
The energy.
Yeah, the energy. And so with the audience giving you feedback and laughing at your jokes, it makes you feel really great. And then you just don't even realize you're nervous or anything. I usually get nervous right before I go on.
Yeah,
and then when I'm on, it's like, oh,
yeah. The thing is, too, is you are your character. You're not you on stage. Mm-hmm. So, like, you're really nervous at first, of course. But then you get on stage and you know your lines and you know your choreography and your music. And you're not, like, I'm not Lily anymore. I'm Alice when I'm on stage. So it's not nearly as scary as you'd think it would be.
Are you, Alice is about 10 years old in the book anyway.
Yeah.
So are you playing it as a young
girl? I'm playing her as 14 years old.
Okay. How does that, but you are not 14 years old.
No,
so
I'm
you
not.
you are scaling it back. What do you, what's that like? Or is it fun to kind of play a kid again?
It is. Yeah, it's cool. I definitely couldn't have played her at 10 years old. 10 year olds are so much different than 17 year olds and even 14 year olds. Definitely. I focus a lot on like not making too mature like moves on stage and stuff. Like a lot of that, I try to seem really childish and innocent. It's hard, but it's really cool. Yeah. And like with my costume on, I have like a cute little bow, and I don't know, it feels definitely more like girly and childish, and I like it.
And she had to remember her sass. So we had to add a little bit of sassiness to her character.
Mm-hmm.
Said, this is where you can be a little bit, have a little temper.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so that was hard too.
That was hard, especially because you're trying to be innocent and cutesy, but then like there's definitely a part where I like stand up to the Queen of Hearts and I have to be super sassy. And 14-year-olds are sassy. So that's something that like you have to keep in mind.
The Mad Hatter is usually, oftentimes, a male role. Is it, are you playing it as a male? Or is this a female Mad Hatter or what's?
Yes, I'm playing it as a male. I've played many male roles. In Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, I played Boris Despy. That was a fun mm-hmm. role. I think that was my first male role, yes. But I like it because you don't have to be worried about what this dress looks on you on stage. You're like, I'm a man and I can do anything I want.
Mm.
And it's really great. And it makes the character come out more easily. And so that's fun about being male roles. And so, yeah, I'm trying to be, it's hard to play male for sure.
Mm. Although you have bright pink hair.
Yes, I have bright pink hair. It's very hard to not play with like a girl.
Mm-hmm.
And bright pink eyebrows and lots of really glowing makeup. It's really cool. The black lights are the coolest part.
Yeah.
Definitely. And so playing a male it's fun. It's refreshing at sometimes because you don't have to worry about anything. Just
yeah, it's different. And the character is also kind of nuts, mm-hmm. at least. Are you having fun with that? Are you kind of off the wall?
Yes, I'm having a lot of fun. I'm definitely crazy normally, a little bit. So I'm not acting that much. No, just kidding. It's really fun because doing a lot of background on Hatters back then, you know, like why they're mad and why they're going crazy, and so that's cool to have information like that. like the glue they used had mercury in it or something like that, and it
right
made
yeah.
them crazy, and so you know stuff like that, and it helps you to it adds in why you're mad. And having a story of like where you came from as the Mad Hatter helps a lot too.
Mm-hmm.
We do a lot of background and acting techniques with that. It helps the characters come out more because we know where we came from, where the character came from.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Yeah. People, I mean, I think the only Hatter that anybody knows of anymore is the Mad Hatter from Alice in Wonderland. You don't know that there is this, that it came from sort of a historical place where hatters went crazy because they were putting weird chemicals in their hats that drove them insane.
And it's really hard to be playing something that Johnny Depp played.
Uh-huh. Do you?
No one can be as good as Johnny Depp, but it's theater, so it's different than film, but he definitely did a very good job at it.
Yeah. Speaking of that, have you guys watched there's been a couple Disney versions now. Have you watched the animated and the new movie, or have you been trying to avoid that too?
Definitely. As soon as I found out that I was Alice, I went home and watched both of them, both the animation and the Tim Burton film. And it actually is kind of nice. Like, yeah, you want your own character, but it's kind of nice to see how it has been portrayed. And also, I just love those movies. But yeah.
Yeah, it definitely helps to know like how Johnny Depp did it, to either not do it like he did to make it your own, or like, oh, I like how he did that one part and add it in, make it your own. And it's really fun.
Yeah. Who, Casey Stern, stage manager, who should go see this play?
Oh, it's definitely a play for all ages. We have a lot of fun scenes with the little kids to really get energized and see all the dancing that we have, the Mad Hatter and Alice and even our cat doing. And then I think it also inspires them to want to do it more when they see all the other little kids their age on stage as well. And then it's also really fun for the parents because they're going to see their kids excited about it. And there's also some parts where the parents might understand, like the tongue twister. I think the parents will understand a little bit more how challenging it was, but still how fun. And I think it will bring out the youthfulness that parents have that they never really show when they watch this show. So that's what I really like about it. It's just so fun and childish and just it's not in your face, but it's very just upbeat and exciting.
It definitely brings out the kid in most people.
And the show is, remind me again, when and where and how do we get tickets?
So it is at the high school in the auditorium. We open tomorrow, the 18th. And the show starts at 7. And then the next day, Saturday, the 19th, we have two shows, a matinee at 2 and then an evening show at 7. And then the following weekend, we have shows the 24th, 25th, and 26th at 7 o'clock. You can get tickets at Ease Leaves, brownpapertickets.com. Make sure you lurk for Alice in Wonderland in Sandpoint. And then you can also get them from cast and crew.
I see. And the you guys have a busy couple weekends coming up.
We do.
Definitely.
I don't know. Did we forget to mention anything? No? Ready to, is that me? Yes. Yeah. No, that's, if you hear a buzzing, that's my fault. That is not any of the guests. Mom, please. we're going to take a quick musical break and we'll be back with Jane Fritz of the Idaho Myth Weaver. Thank you, Jeannie Hunter, Lily Weishauer.
Weishauer, close enough.
Weishauer, okay.
It's okay.
Natalie Aller and Casey Stearns, thank you all so much for coming in this morning, and I break a leg.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
This is Chris Christopherson with Johnny Lobo. We'll be back with more of The Morning Show on 88.5 KRFY. You've got one going, Jane. That was actually an excellent segue. In the studio right now is Jane Fritz, the president, director of the Idaho Myth Weaver. Jane, that song was called Johnny Lobo by Chris Christopherson. Can you tell me anything about that song?
What was that about? Just that he wrote it. In honor and in tribute to John Trudell and his activism, his creativity, his work on behalf of Native people everywhere. And And it's just, it's a great song. I probably heard it back in the 70s, and I'm not sure when it was written, but it wasn't until watching the film that it's sort of the outro in the film, and you listen to it and go, wow, that is a cool song.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, thank you for finding it and playing it.
We tracked it down. That film that you're talking about is called Trudell, and the screenings are at the library this weekend. Two screenings, 12:30 and 2:30 p.m. this Saturday.
Right.
Right?
And those are free screenings, Jack.
They are.
Yeah.
Excellent. No charge. And this is the last in the series of your films that you've been putting on at the library.
Right. And yeah. It's been a very popular series. I really appreciate having another chance to come up and speak to your listeners here on KRFY, because it helps get the public out and interested. This film is probably an interesting one for people to kind of, for us to use as the finale for the series, the Native Heritage series.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we started with the Pilgrims and the Mayflower. And this really brings us up into the American Indian movement of the 70s and 80s. And people will remember some of that because it was in the news. And there was the beginning was Alcatraz and the occupation of Alcatraz Island, and John was very involved in that. And then it progressed to the occupation of the Bureau of Indian Affairs building in Washington, D.C. after they wouldn't meet with tribal members. And he was young. He was in his 20s and early 30s, quite an activist. And he was just one of about a handful of Native people who really saw themselves as representing the grassroots activism. You know, this is coming out of government policies like relocation and termination, you know, where tribes where the government was trying to pay tribes off to go away, just basically become non-tribal. And that almost happened with our local Kalispell tribe. They came very close to being terminated. Non-treaty tribes in particular. But what John and Russell Banks and Russell Means and Dennis Banks and other leaders of the American Indian Movement really worked toward was trying to get the government to honor treaties that were signed in the 1800s. They always were looking for agreements and things that people could agree on, the government and Indian tribes. So they didn't represent a particular tribe. They represented a movement.
Mm-hmm. Does the film you're showing this weekend, does it show his whole life story? Or
no, it kind of picks it up a little bit about his beginnings, his roots. And it turned out, I didn't know this, but his mother was Mexican. So his father was Santee Dakota, and, you know, he grew up on the reservation. So it talks a little bit about his roots. But then it gets into his activism in the 70s and the 80s. And it's kind of interesting because in that period of time, the FBI, because of him being one of the, he was just an amazing, eloquent spokesman. In fact, my favorite quote from an FBI memo is that, you know, he is extremely eloquent, therefore extremely dangerous.
Hmm.
And they had like a 17,000-page dossier on him between 1979 and 1969 and 79, I think, you know, that 10-year period.
Yeah.
So they really saw him because he was an amazing spokesman on behalf of the, you know, younger generations of tribal people, traditionalists who were trying to keep their culture alive. And, you know, this is coming out of the boarding school times where a lot of that culture was, you know, just destroyed. So he you know, Indian people don't make heroes out of their people typically. We do that, you know, Crazy Horse or Joseph as chief of the Nez Perce when he was only one Nez Perce chief of many who were leaders. You know, so, but he is a hero to a lot of Native people. And it's interesting because I watched the film at home, you know, previewing movies, and found out that he had died just like 4 days prior to that.
Yeah.
And there's a connection with the Idaho myth weaver in John, with his family. I don't know if I want to talk about that now or say, come to the film and I'll reveal all that. I don't know. I've been struggling with that. But it was a personal tragedy. I didn't realize at the time who his family was and where they lived. But it was on the Duck Valley Reservation, which straddles Idaho and Nevada in the southwest corner of Idaho. It's considered an Idaho reservation. The Shoshone Paiute peoples live there. And that's where he was living when he wasn't out, you know, being at Alcatraz or Washington, D.C. on their way back. The film shows this on their way back from the occupation at the BIA. Wounded Knee happened, the occupation at Wounded Knee. There was what was going on at that time called the Reign of Terror. And it was within the reservation among the leadership of the, on the Pine Ridge Reservation. And the traditionalists were being kind of, I don't know, it's an incredible story. If you see a film about Wounded Knee itself, it really draws all that out. So that occupation that happened for 70 some days was in the news, you know, nearly every day because, you know, they brought tanks and helicopters and so on. So John was involved in that. But then this mysterious incident occurred, tragedy, where his wife, pregnant wife, three children, and her mother, name's Tina Manning, and were all killed in a house fire. And it was mysterious because it was like 12 hours after he had burned a flag again in D.C. at the foot of, I don't remember if it was the Supreme Court building or one of the buildings. Basically, he was a veteran and a naval veteran, I believe, and basically said that, you know, this is what you do to a tarnished flag is you burn it. He wasn't burning it not being patriotic. He was burning it as a symbol of speaking out against government programs that had basically betrayed Native peoples in this country. And 12 hours later, this incredible tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
So that brought him to what a lot of the film is about. It's really an artistic, an arts film, I'd like to say, more than a documentary. Because it's really a portrait about how he was this activist on behalf of the earth, on behalf of his people, the grassroots, and trying to get the government to be fair and honor their treaties. And then he has this incredible loss, personal tragedy. And what does he do after, as part of the healing of that, is he emerges as this amazing artist, poet, performance artist, working with Native musicians, creating albums and traveling around the world with his message. So his message never really went away. And so I think that's one reason I found him to be such an amazing leader. It's because he channeled that energy.
Mm-hmm.
So the film really documents that. And the filmmaker, Heather Ray, who I believe is part Native, the film was made in 2005. She spent 12 years following his life. And so you really get it's a great biopic, but it's also an arts film. So there's great poetry, great music, and it's free, folks. Yeah. So come on out on Saturday at 12:30. We'll have a second screening at 2:30 at the library in the Rude Girls Room. And we'll have a short discussion afterwards, because I did make contact with the family recently.
Mm-hmm.
Just to, you know, get their take on everything. So you hear what the film has to say about the tragedy, but then I have some personal reflections after talking to the family that might be interesting to share.
I would think so, yeah. The film also features, as you said, it's not a straight documentary, but it has interviews, I'm guessing, with some... Notable names.
He was part, you know, when you asked me if I've ever encountered John Trudell personally, I attended the No Nukes concert that Jackson Browne and Bonnie Raitt did in Colorado back in the late 70s. And he was performing with them at that time. He'd come out and speak, I think. So he was very good friends with Jackson Browne and Bonnie Raitt and Kris Kristofferson, who wrote that great song, Johnny Lobo. He saw himself as sort of a lone black wolf. And Robert Redford speaks very highly of him, produced a film called Incident at Ogallala that has to do with Leonard Peltier. And John was interviewed in that and part of that. So, you know, there's some really, and he also got into a little acting. He was in the movie Thunderheart. With
Val Kilmer.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
And so, you know, actually Val Kilmer speaks and Sam Shepard speaks. I think Sam Shepard's in that film too, if I'm not mistaken.
Maybe.
But anyway, so he had a short stint at acting, but he always got his voice out. And it was always, there was a wonderful tribute, if I can just kind of close, because I know we're real close here.
Mm-hmm.
With a quote from a letter to the editor in the Indian Country Today newsletter after his death in December, this past December. And it said, talks about him now being on his spirit journey, but he said, as John put it, quote, "No matter what they ever do to us, we must always act for the love of our people and the earth. We must not react out of hatred against those who have no sense." And so he, you know, he was always coming from a place of love, not from a place of destruction. That was really important. You know, he did say things like, "Well, if you're not angry, you're not paying attention." But, you know, he also called on people to be, you know, peaceful. So in my mind, he's sort of like the Native American version of a Martin Luther King, or, you know, for his people. And we don't put much attention to, you know, the civil rights movement and what was happening to Indian people during that time. And this is right around, just, you know, right around the same time, inspired by the civil rights movement, so, of the 60s. So anyway, it's a great chronicle of history, a great chronicle of revolution in America, among oppressed peoples. So I hope people come out for it.
Well, yeah, it is a fascinating story. I haven't seen the movie, but it has some good reviews on the internet. So
it won awards too at film festivals. So
a fascinating man, poet and activist John Trudell. The movie is called Trudell, and When and Where is it showing again?
It will be in the Rude Girls Room of the Bonner County, East Bonner County Library District, Sandpoint Branch, over on Cedar Street and Division. And we have two screenings, one at 12:30 on Saturday afternoon and the second screening at 2:30 that afternoon. And it is free, and there'll be light refreshments, and we'll have a short discussion after the film.
And, well, we could talk all day, I'm sure, but we are plumb out of time. So stay tuned for Bird Note and Otto's Eclectic Mix all day long. Thanks for tuning into The Morning Show. And Jane Fritz, thanks again for for being here. We'll
Thank
see you next
you,
time.
Thank you, Jack.